From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm producer Megan Mack, joined by host Evan Dawson.
Hello.
Hello. The president of the Urban League of America came to Rochester this week, and he came to Connections, too. Mark Morial was a guest of the Urban League of Rochester.
And he came to Connections to talk about race in America and the Urban League's efforts to engage presidential candidates. Keep in mind that later this month marks the eight-year anniversary of then-Senator Barack Obama's speech on race in Philadelphia. We're going to be devoting an entire program to that event.
We wanted Morial to weigh in on the Obama presidency as it relates to race relations in America.
If you look at the facts of the matter, I think the president has certainly made a tremendous difference. I think he has had an opportunity to shape and reshape with diversity the judiciary, the district courts, and the appellate courts in the country. And I also believe that one's true impact can only be understood maybe 10 years after they left office, because a lot depends on whether the changes they brought on have been institutionalized. But the president, to me, has been remarkable in his grace and coolness under a tremendous deal of pressure, whether it's the pressure of the problems of the country, the Great Recession, the challenges in foreign affairs with the instability in the Middle East, or simply the way in which his opponents have sought to vilify him. I think he's held his head high, and he's demonstrated that a president who is African-American can competently manage and lead this nation and be a leader for all Americans.
Let's stay on politics for a moment with a question. Why do we believe so many things that aren't true? In this case, I'm talking about hoaxes and fake quotations specifically.
Oh, you know that one about Abraham Lincoln, what he famously said about quotes on the internet?
Exactly. We talked to Anna Burks, a research librarian at Monticello. There's an entire section of their website just devoted to policing fake Jefferson quotes.
That was sort of out of necessity, really. We were getting so many questions about this that we thought it would be useful to just put all this information that we were gathering up on our website so that people could find it for themselves. And actually, it did have that effect where, the questions flow has slowed down now that we have all this spurious quotes information on our website. Sometimes they come to me. Sometimes people will email us or call us and ask us about a quote that they've seen or heard in the media. Sometimes we see them. I have a Google alert set up so that I can see, you know, when people are mentioning Jefferson on the internet, and so I'll get an email every day. And sometimes we spot new spurious quotes that way. So all different ways, you know, they come at us all the time.
On Thursday, we talked about transportation.
That's been a hot subject in Rochester lately, thanks in part to the Community Design Center. They bring in guest speakers from around the country to talk about what's worked elsewhere, light rail, buses, walkable cities.
I had a chance to ask Jackie Grimshaw at the Center for Neighborhood Technology why Chicago diversified its transportation plan and what we can learn from that.
As part of our concern about transit is that we have a hub and spoke system. So the way the system was originally designed, the loop was kind of the center of activity. And from the center of the city going out in spokes, we had the streetcar system and the bus system and even our subway and elevated system all merge at the center and then go out from there. Now, one of the things that we found was that as we got into the interstate highway system, companies followed those highways out of the city. And so we have five major employment areas in the Chicago area, only one of which is served by transit, and that is the loop, where, you know, kind of the hub of our transit system. And so what we found was that there was a disconnect between where people who really needed jobs were and their ability to get to these job centers. So our solution was to identify transit options that would solve what we call transit deserts, that people who needed jobs would be able to use transit to get to those jobs that were located around the outskirts of the city itself and even within the city, to facilitate people being able to get jobs and to be able to sustain themselves with higher paying jobs than they could in kind of a local area where they were forced to walk or have to rely on a car and a car that might not be reliable. So if they got a job, they would lose it because the car would break down. You know, we have, like Rochester, some challenging weather at some point during the year. So, you know, that was kind of the impetus for what got us looking at transit. And in spite of our wonderful transit system, we just found there were still inadequacies that we needed to solve.
Now to a word that seems to provoke a heated response in many people, millennials.
Well, you're technically a millennial.
I'm technically in the range.
Okay. Does that word provoke a heated response in you?
I'm not a fan of the word millennial.
You don't like it?
I don't.
You don't like the whole age generation thing?
Not really.
I've never known what I am, and I actually don't really like it either, partially because I think that you can pigeonhole people, and there is some serious stereotyping of millennials going on. You know, they're entitled, they don't work hard. You've probably heard it. Well, a recent open letter went thermonuclear viral, written by a millennial named Talia Jane. She worked for Yelp. She complained she couldn't afford to live in San Francisco, where the company's operations located. She blamed the company for poor pay, but thousands of online commentators say that this young woman is not being accountable. She chose to live in San Francisco. She didn't get a roommate or a second job, and she shamed her own boss publicly, and so then she got fired.
We invited a panel of millennials to come in and talk about the stereotypes and what their thoughts were on Talia's letter. Here's Chuck Wade, a millennial who's a financial planner for Brighton Securities.
I could genuinely see in her letter some legitimate concerns and the feeling that knowing that what you take in is not enough to pay for what you have to then send out, and knowing that feeling and the fear and the anxiety that probably brings up, I genuinely felt for her. On the other hand, I felt Abraham Lincoln used to write a letter if he was upset with somebody. He would write them a letter and he would put it in his desk. He wouldn't send it. And then he would take a day later, he would pull the letter back out and decide if he still thought it was a good idea to send it. I really think she probably should have done that with this. Write it, don't post it, wait 24 hours and think, because it came off as very entitled. And I thought, you had choices. You chose this job. I'm sure that before you agreed to the job, you knew what the income was going to be, what you would be paid for said job, and that you knew it was in San Francisco, which is one of the most expensive cities in the country to live in. So you knew what you were getting into. And I just don't think it was a smart way to do it. What I often just think of my generation is we're the cell phone generation. And I am so guilty of it, and how we, you know, we'll look around and you're in a doctor's office, you're in a waiting room and everyone's on their phone.
You're in line at Wegmans.
Yeah, all the time. And I'm guilty of that. But at the same time, sometimes I'll look and I'll say, geez, you know, Ben and I had a really nice conversation in the lobby and we were able to sit there and talk. And it almost, you know, there's a point where it's like it becomes somewhat, I think, uncomfortable for my generation to sit and not be able to pull your phone out and look at it. It's like a crutch that we have sometimes. So I think that's what I identify most with our age group, is that we're the cell phone generation. I don't think of myself as a millennial, but part of the cell phone and
device people.
Device generation, absolutely.
We'll end the week with a story about a compelling local couple. Tony and Renee Colon own Fuego Coffee Roasters in Rochester.
They are a small business success story, opening a second location, selling their roasted beans at a growing list of places. They're also helping young girls in Guatemala, helping an orphanage there. And they're buying coffee beans directly from farmers, which means the farmers get a higher wage, no middleman to cut into their take.
But it was their personal story that surprised and moved us. In 2007, Tony and Renee got into a car accident, and they shared the story of how it changed their lives.
So we were driving from my sister's house to my mother's house, and we were hit head-on by someone who was driving a huge SUV, passing in a no-passing zone, going probably twice as fast as she should have been.
And how badly were you hurt?
Oh, I was, every inch of me was broken. From my feet to my head, I had a broken ankle, two broken knees, a broken femur, shattered pelvis, broken elbow, fractured vertebrae, and multiple skull fractures and traumatic brain injury.
I don't want to ask you to relive too much of that. I'm curious to know if you remember the moments.
No.
So it hit and you were out.
Yep. I don't even remember. The last thing I remember is we stopped at our apartment here in Rochester to pick up our dog. I don't remember anything else. I don't remember getting to my parents' house. I don't remember going to my sister's.
Wow.
I don't remember, like, the 16 hours.
The last thing
you
remember was
accident.
In Rochester.
Yes.
But the accident happened.
Yeah, the next day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing what an accident like that can do.
Absolutely.
Were you the worst of the injury? Did everybody survive?
Yes.
Okay.
Tony had a lot of bruises from the seatbelt, and my nephew, who was 7 at the time, had a concussion.
Tony, what do you remember about that? I mean, you remember it pretty well?
I remember everything about it.
She gets to forget it. You don't.
Yeah,
I don't.
I don't get to forget.
Yeah. Was it just as bad as it sounds, huh?
Yeah, it was really bad. I mean, you know, everybody thinks that you can walk away with that and be fine if you only have bruises. But I'm still, and I don't want to sound like a sob story or anything like that, but it takes a long time to get through it. And here's the thing, I still suffer from it every single day. And, you know, it's like, does that thought go through my head every day? Yeah, does the sound of the two cars colliding and, you know, remembering certain aspects of it? Yeah, I remember everything.
Did you think you were going to lose her?
I thought she was gone when I looked to my left. I was in the passenger seat and she was in the driver's seat, so I looked to my left and I thought she was already gone. Just by appearance. And the thing is, when you see something like that and you have the wind knocked out of you, you have to, like, kind of, you know, most people will be like, oh, I have to see if this person's all right, but you can't breathe. The seatbelt knocked the wind out of me, so I had to get out of the car and I had to gain composure, but then you're in shock, so you don't know what to do. And luckily, my brother-in-law, which is her brother, and my sister-in-law were a couple cars behind us, and they pulled up, they saw it, and they took me to the other car, and they dealt with the immediate things because I wasn't able to.
I mean, it just sounds amazing, everything that Renee went through, that you did, that you survived.
Absolutely. The doctors are still shocked.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because, you know, to see a person that's completely unconscious, that's in a coma, mm-hmm. She had use of her hands, and we gave her, like, you know, stress balls and stuff like that because her hands were fidgety, even though that she was unconscious. The doctors were just so amazed with how the human body works. I mean, they see it every day, but when you see someone throwing a stress ball up in the air and catching it while being unconscious, and they'd be like, this is really, really interesting.
I've got skills.
Getting to know Renee, I'm actually not surprised at that part. But what was the duration then? I mean, you were laid up for how long?
Yeah, I was in the hospital for 2 months.
2 months.
It's November until February, I believe.
January, the end of January.
End of January.
It was almost 2 months to the day after I was discharged. And then about a month after being discharged, and I had to wear a complete leg brace. Oh, my kneecap was torn from the patella tendon, which hurts so much more and is such a longer healing process than actual bones. So I lived with my sister in Syracuse for the next 6 months, I think.
Yeah.
Because I had to go back twice a week for physical rehab. And I had to wear a helmet. Oh, I hated that helmet. Until in June, I had a surgery to fix my skull and I could be free of the helmet permanently.
All right, so remind our listeners, what year was this?
The accident was 2007.
2007.
Yep.
Do you still have any pain to this day?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's not nearly what it should be, and I know that, but every now and then I'll just step down on my left leg wrong and get this twinge of pain. One of the trips to Guatemala, well, the one trip I've already taken to Guatemala, I forgot to bring my knee brace, and trudging through those mountains,
oh, wow.
there were days when, like, I had to hold my knee up and massage it. But I'm grateful because even though I'm in pain occasionally, it hasn't limited me physically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're traveling the world still. You know,
right.
You're owning a business. So there's a – but it sounds like – Tony, it sounds like you both were already sort of thinking about your future, what you wanted to do. At a pretty young age anyway. Did that accident change anything for you?
on the way that I look at business now. Did it change me as a person? I think, yeah, a little bit. I think it's really reined in who I am a little bit, because if you would have known me a little bit before, I was very, very, not to say that I'm not outgoing now, but I was very, very outgoing, and I think maybe a little bit more sporadic and like, you know, hey, this is a good idea, I'm going to do this, you know? I would just do it without really thinking. Now I think a lot more about consequences or anything like that, mm-hmm. you know?
Renee, did it change you at all?
Oh, absolutely. You would not believe I am the same person I was before the car accident. I used to be, I spent the first 22 years of my life very quiet, very shy, never spoke my mind. And now it's like, if it's in my head, it's out my mouth. That's just how it is.
Is that because you're thinking, well, it's a free roll now. I could have been gone, so might as well. Or is that a conscious decision?
I'm not completely sure.
Wait a second. You fell in love with a different personality. mm-hmm. You didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. You know, this was a hard conversation that we had to have. I mean, like I said, I never really want to, you know, bring this down to like, you know, like a sob story or anything like that. But I had to realize that my wife died in that car accident, and now I'm married to a different person, and I have to love a new person. I know it sounds weird, and I know it sounds different. She's there. She has the same memories. She has the same, you know, look to her. But, you know, for the most part, her personality is totally different. And, you know, with her brain injury, the part that was affected most was the frontal lobe, which really dictates personality.
Tony and Renee Colon, my guests. Renee, the second version of Renee, 2.0. Is she okay with you, though, Tony?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's good. At least I know when she's mad at me.
That's true.
It's really an amazing story. They own Fuego, two locations, one on Liberty Pole Way in Rochester, the other at where, Renee?
Monroe Community College, the Brighton campus.
Congratulations on the success so far, and thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
And that's it for another edition of Weekend Connections.
You can listen to Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and on WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
You can also find us on WXXI.org/listen and on the WXXI mobile app. From all of us here at Connections, I'm Megan Mack. He's Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend.
I just remembered the music. Do you like that?
Every week, we'll get better.
Do the music.